podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the latest edition of the Punt Podcast here with William Hill. Good to have you with us. My name is Dave Kellner and we're going to go through the televised games in the fourth round of the FA Cup alongside Derek McGovern and William Hill's Andy Excel in a few moments' time. We will also speak later on this podcast to Miguel Delaney, the chief football writer at The Independent. We're going to talk about the sacking of Marco Silva and whether Liverpool are running into clubs at the wrong times or not this season, or if there's something deeper at play. We'll also hear from Pete Farries. He's going to give us a bet in the Championship. We've got Gav Puchalski on League One, Al Ross on League Two, and Sam Norris giving his best bet in Europe as well. But first, a look at the televised games in the FA Cup. And Derek McGovern joins us. Derek, have you been doing anything interesting this week?
Counting my winnings after yet another winning nap last week. Chelsea not to concede, I think you'll find.
I must be flying up that table. I think if I get a winner this week, I'll be lapping Andy.
I'll have to update the naps table and I'll do that before next week's podcast. But yeah, back-to-back winners for Derek. Andy, which luxurious location are you joining us from this morning?
I'm in the east wing of my property today.
Are you counting your William Hill's winnings, Andy?
Yeah, it was a good weekend last weekend, and it's been a good start to the year for us generally. But yeah, last weekend was a bit of a tricky one. Liverpool bailed us out on the Monday.
They did, with that defeat against Swansea. We'll talk more about that on this podcast later on. In the programme, but first we're going to get stuck into the televised games in the FA Cup this weekend, and we will start with Friday night's fixture as Yeovil take on Manchester United. Yeovil are 16-1 to win this game. The draw 13-2 with Manchester United 2-13. The enhanced odds here, Francois Zirka to score and Yeovil to win was 30-1. That's been enhanced to 40-1. And Marcus Rashford to score and Manchester United to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0 was 3-1. That's been enhanced to 7-2. Derek, the Alexis Sanchez signing has finally been confirmed. I mean, whether or not he features in this match, it must be a good signing for Manchester United. Terrific player. And it's being talked about as being, in inverted commas, a cheap buy. Just the 500 grand a week for Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah. Well, it's great. These were the matches he dreamed about when he signed for United, aren't they? Yeovil away. I think he was a Yeovil fan as a boy. I think you might find. I tell you, I mean, the wages are ridiculous, aren't they? I've been thinking if Jose Mourinho, next time he parks the bus, and he could do it on Friday night because it's Yeovil, you know, he'll have the perfect excuse because the bus is there to transport Sanchez's wages. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, the money that's being talked about. And it leads to a further divorce between football, Premier League football anyway, and fans. I think more and more fans are just getting turned off. I don't, you know, for years I've defended the wages players get because I'm thinking, well, where are they different from, like, Tom Cruise appearing in Mission Impossible or whatever is getting paid about £5 million for, you know, a few weeks' work. They're the best at their jobs. They're entitled to it. But what Sanchez's pay does now is, I don't mind him getting it. Maybe that salary is a bit daft. But it brings up everybody else's salary. So you're getting crap pullbacks for Hull or Watford who are on about 80 grand a week. And, you know, it's daft. It's madhouse.
Defensive midfielders as well, Derek. They're on too much, definitely.
Yeah, well, if they whatever they're paid, it's too much defensive midfielder. They should pay clubs for fielding them. And a role I was never heard of about, what, 30 years ago. And now no team can do without three of them in a game. It's ridiculous.
United, by the way, have progressed in each of their last 16 FA Cup ties as a top-flight side against teams from the fourth tier or lower. Yeovil 21st in League Two, and they've been a shared disappointing this season as well. I suppose, Derek, you're thinking about eking out... Do you fancy Manchester United? Are you thinking about eking out value on United here?
Well, no, because the 2-13, and so whatever you look, whichever way you look at United here, it's no value. I mean, 2-13 away from home to the at a home of established giant killers like Yeovil, and you've got to question their commitments. I mean, they're still in Manchester City's slipstream at the top of the Premier League. They've got the Champions League coming up soon, and let's not forget that Chelsea, when Jose Mourinho was manager a few years ago, pretty much threw away an FA Cup game against Bradford. At home as well, that was, by the way. Because basically, it was just fixtures he didn't want. Mourinho's been blabbering on about fixtures all year long. It ain't going to get any easier the longer they stay in the FA Cup. So there's a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen against Yeovil, because that would be a humiliation too far. But they've got to question the commitments of United. And do you want to back a team at 2-13 in any way, shape or form when their commitment is questionable? There's a few ties on this Coupon this weekend. The more I look at it, the more I see these big clubs involved in FA Cup action when they've got the Champions League coming up, and there's so many big clubs involved in the Champions League now. I'm thinking there could be upsets on the cards. Yeovil, if they were flying, you might give them half a squeak, you know, but they're struggling at the bottom of League Two. But Yeovil plus two goals is 17-10. I'm going to go for that.
Yeah, and midweek fixtures in the Premier League
Tottenham coming up next week for Man United on Wednesday. Yeah, I meant to say that. That is a very important point.
Andy, your thoughts on this one?
Well, similarly, I'm concerned about United's team that they're going to put out because of the fixtures they've got around it and their motivation to go to Yeovil. So I don't think they're going to put the strongest team out, but they don't need to. They'll do a Mourinho grind out a win probably to nil, so that's the angle I'm coming at, is Man United to win to nil. Not great odds on price, but that's, like you say, you're trying to eke something out. And they'll probably just, like you say, workmanlike victory over Yeovil who are firing.
8-13 it is, Manchester United to win that game to nil. Peterborough versus Leicester next. 12:30 kickoff on Saturday, this one. Peterborough 4-1 to win it. The draw 16-5, Leicester 8-13. Jack Marriott to score and Peterborough to win. That was 6-1. That's been enhanced to 7-1. And Jamie Vardy to score and Leicester to win was 13-10. That's been enhanced to 6-4. Andy, there's a feeling ahead of this game that Claude Puel will be desperate to get this done, first time of asking. Fleetwood took them to the replay. He talked about that being an unwarranted replay and something they didn't need. And Leicester are unbeaten in five now. And when we talked at the beginning of this competition, when the Premier League teams were coming in before round three, about Leicester and how they were going to perform, I think there was a sense of feeling that this was a trophy they could win, Leicester. But Puel rested players away at Fleetwood, did the same at home when Kelechi Iheanacho scored twice. So whether this is towards the top of his priority list is open to question and debate, Andy.
Well, yeah, it appears somebody told him there's a prize for seventh in the Premier League. Because what else have they got to play for?
Exactly.
So, to me, they should be putting all guns out here. I'm not sure they will. But traditionally, Peterborough are seen as a team that score goals. But the stat I'll throw at you here is Leicester have kept five clean sheets in a row. So, similarly to United, I'm going down the Leicester to win to nil route, which I think might be all right. I think they'll win quite, you know, Peterborough are a terrific side. They're all right. And Leicester should be easily good enough to beat them, even if they don't put out the strongest team. So to nil for Leicester for me again here.
9-5 Leicester to win to nil. If you fancy Leicester -1, that's available at 6-4. And I mentioned Iheanacho. He probably will start up front for Leicester. He's even money to score any time. And if you think he's going to repeat the trick in terms of getting two or more, like he did against Fleetwood, that's 9-2 in the market. Derek.
Well, Iheanacho, you mentioned that. He's played for Manchester City, signed for big money by them, signed now by Leicester. And I've yet to see a single thing he's done that's made me think, now there's a player. He's one of these players that keep getting, you know, getting games for big clubs for no apparent reason. Leicester will win this. He played a few second stringers in the last round because it was only Fleetwood. he's entitled to do that, I think. They're now seventh in the league. And remember I said that Leicester were, when they were struggling near the bottom, I said Leicester are the seventh best team in the Premier League. Well, they've proved it now. They ain't going to go much further down than that. They ain't going to go up any further. But they ain't going to go any down much further either. They've got to concentrate on this. If I was a Leicester fan, I'd be doing me nut if they didn't. And let's not forget Claude Puel treated the League Cup with seriousness last season. He took Southampton there all the way to the final. So Leicester will win this 8-13, and that 9-5, Leicester to win to nil. That's too big. That is way too big. That I like the look of that.
Newport versus Spurs next. This is a 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. Newport 16-1 to win this game. The draw 6-1 with Spurs in the betting at 1-6. Podraig Almon to score and Newport to win was 22-1. That's been enhanced to 33-1. And if you fancy Fernando Llorente to score and Spurs to win 2-0, 3-0 or 4-0, that was 100-30. That's been enhanced to 4-1. Derek, is this a competition that Mauricio Pochettino is targeting? This club, they desperately need some silverware with the quality they've got there in their ranks at the moment before they... I think it's inevitable they're going to lose some of those top players.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's something about Spurs right now. It's not, they're not firing, are they? That game last week against Southampton, wasn't it? Yeah, you know, they didn't... I think they remind me a bit of Chelsea without Hazard. I think Spurs without Eriksen is a problem too. They looked shorn of invention last week. They're not going to need much invention to get through this, and they should do, but 1-6, and again, you have to, for the same reasons I mentioned about Man United earlier, one, you've got to question their commitment here too. You've got two big games coming up next week, Man United first on the Wednesday, and then Liverpool on the following Sunday. I'm not about building up ammunition to back Newport here, but, you know, there's reasons not to be lumping the mortgage on Tottenham at short odds. Especially when you look at they've played 12 away games in the Premier League this season and won only, you know, and failed to win 6 of them. Mm. Again, this is another one where I'm looking to back the underdog with a bit of a handicap, because I think it would just be a case of getting the job done for these big clubs. They can't afford to go out against cannon fodder like this. But they can't afford to take the foot off the gas when they're 1-0, maybe 2-0 up. So I think there's a bit of mileage here in going for Newport. For them, this is their cup, but this is the game of their lives, isn't it, for Newport? But Tottenham, it's a game they just don't want to, they're not interested in whatsoever. So I'm going to go for Newport here with a two-goal start, which is 29-20.
It is indeed. And mustn't forget here as well, Newport beat Leeds United in the last round of the competition. This is the first time in 41 years they've reached the fourth round, so it is huge for Newport. And they're up to eighth in the league now as well. They're unbeaten in their last six. Is this one of those, Andy, from a bookmaking perspective, you're thinking, maybe, just maybe, we could get Spurs beaten?
Yeah, maybe, just maybe. There's a chance. So it really does depend what sort of Tottenham teams put out. I think they'll put the attacking players out, but I'm worried they might rest some of the defenders or midfield players, try and give them a rest before the big game's coming up. Like you're saying, Newport are on a decent run. They've scored in their last seven games. So on the contrary to what I've said in the previous two games, I might be going down the road of Spurs to win, but both teams to score here, because I think that Newport could get one. And the 16-1 isn't the worst price you've ever seen, you know. There is a small chance, but that's probably me being more hopeful than I'm actually expecting.
Spurs to win the game and both teams to score in the match is Andy's pick. That's 17-10. Full range of markets, hashtag your odds available on that game as well. It is live on William Hill TV. If you are logged into your account with a positive betting balance, you can watch Newport versus Spurs on Saturday evening. A Saturday night, we have Liverpool versus West Brom. 7:45 kickoff. This one, a 2-7 for Liverpool to win the game. The draw 9-2 with West Brom in the betting at 9-1. The enhancements, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain to score and Liverpool to win was 2-1. That's been enhanced to 5-2. And Salomon Rondon to score and West Brom to win was 16-1. That's been enhanced to 25-1. Andy, let's start with you here. I think this is a competition. I talked about Pochettino focusing on the FA Cup. I think Jurgen Klopp needs to as well.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, you could look at it that way, but I think they're still looking upwards in the league if they can. But I'll be interested to see what they do here. I mean, Derek's got a tough choice here, and he's getting ready to put his dancing shoes on, head down the Trocadero. Or he's going to be watching this. It's a tough choice for him. But I think he might want to go down the Trocadero because this is going to be a draw. This is what I think. The five out of the last eight games between two teams have ended in a draw. The other three had one goal in it. So I'm willing to take 9-2 the draw, eh?
9-2 the draw. Sounds like a confident selection for Mandy as well. Derek, we're going to talk about Liverpool later on in the podcast in terms of their inability to put the lesser lights away in the Premier League. And what West Brom have sneakily picked up a few points recently with that win at home against Brighton, followed by the draw at Everton. They beat Exeter away in the third round. Maybe there's a chink of light now for West Brom.
Yeah, and it wasn't that long ago, just before Christmas, they went to Anfield and drew 0-0. The same kind of performance as Swansea put up against Liverpool on Monday night. And that's the way to stop Liverpool, as we all know. They're not a team you'd pay money to watch, West Brom. But on Monday night's evidence, now they're at Liverpool. It was just a shocking performance. And Liverpool went out at home to Wolves in round four last season. So another West Midlands team visiting Merseyside at the same stage is probably not a good omen. Although almost certainly better than omen three, I would say. I can't back Liverpool at those odds. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. Alan Pardew, the manager, he did a job. I did the number on them at Anfield a few weeks ago. He will have watched what happened on Monday. And I bet my bottom dollar, if I had any left after Monday night's results, that he'll set up his team in exactly the same manner for Saturday night. And that means one thing, I'll be watching whatever's on the other side or heading down to the Trocadero, dancing shoes on.
I'm never going to be able to get that image out of my head now, Derek.
I've got to go for West Brom with a goal. 13-5, that is a big price for a team that, you know, I just hope that there was a 30-day cooling-off period for Liverpool when Coutinho went. You know, so that transfer hasn't been ratified yet because we need him. Jesus, after what we saw on Monday, West Brom plus a goal, 13-5. That is massive, absolutely massive.
The Saturday night game in Spain looks of real interest this week, with Villarreal taking on Real Sociedad, and the odds against price for the home side looks more than fair. With Real Madrid's uncharacteristically poor season continuing, Villarreal must be able to sniff a Champions League spot this campaign, and that is looking a real possibility. They're just a point behind the top four at this stage, but if they are to realise that ambition, then they have to be putting away sides like Real Sociedad, who are in the doldrums of late and have tumbled down to 15th in the table. Their away form hardly inspires, with no win on the road in five now in La Liga. Villarreal, by contrast, have won four and drawn one of their last five games in the league, keeping three clean sheets along the way. A similar story could be in the offing here, and the 3-1 for them to win 2-0 does look a big price. Real Sociedad thumped Villarreal 3-0 in the reverse fixture early on in the season, but I fully expect the Yellow Submarine to gain revenge here, and I'll go for Villarreal just to win it on the outrights at 6-5. That'll be the nap this week.
On to the game at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea versus Newcastle, 1:30 on Sunday. Chelsea are 4-9 to win this game, the draw 100-30. Newcastle 6-1 here with William Hill. And the enhancements, Michy Batshuayi to score and Chelsea to win was 9-2. That's been boosted to 5-1. And if you think Dwight Gayle is going to score in a Newcastle win, that was 12-1. That's been enhanced to 16-1. And Derek, Chelsea missed out on a trip to Wembley midweek with their loss against Arsenal. The FA Cup gives them another opportunity here, and they are unbeaten in their last 10 FA Cup games against Premier League opposition at Stamford Bridge. They've won 8 of those and drawn 2. It's difficult to know exactly what sides these two managers are going to put out for this match, because Newcastle have a huge game midweek against Burnley at home.
Exactly. So we do know what side they're going to put out, a poor one, which is basically what they've been putting out every week. I remember Rafa's interview before the third round, and somebody asked him whether, this is the manager of Newcastle, whether he'd be fielding a shadow side because, you know, survival was a priority. He said, well, don't know, yeah, he said, you know, in the FA Cup, you just get your league position safe and then you can decide whether you want to go for the FA Cup. Well, their league position is far from safe. No one will complain or murmur dissent if they go out to Chelsea, because it's expected. So they will go out to Chelsea. They're not playing great, the Blues, but they're good enough to beat a shadow Newcastle side. I mean, it's just it seems to be a no-brainer. One thing I would say about Chelsea is that I was disappointed in the three matches they played against Arsenal in recent weeks. I've been really disappointed by them. And I wouldn't be in a rush to be backing them at 4-9 against another Premier League side, wearing off of the fact that it's Newcastle, who I don't think will try a leg. So it has to be Chelsea to win, and probably to nil to me, because Newcastle don't look potent going forward.
That's a shared of odds against Chelsea to win to nil, 13-10 if you don't like the 4-9 for them to win in 90 minutes. I think we've talked about Newcastle resting players, but Chelsea under Antonio Conte in this competition, Andy, he rested players against Norwich in the previous round, but I think he won't want to go to this to another replay here, Conte, and Newcastle might feel a Chelsea backlash after what happened midweek, perhaps.
You probably will have a little bit of a shadow outfit from both teams. You might see the likes of Cahill and Louise playing for Chelsea at the back rather than the people that did midweek. The last four games between these two teams have finished 3-1, 5-1, 2-0 and 3-0 to Chelsea. But the omens aren't good for Newcastle, even if it's full strength. So, similarly to Derek, but slight different tack to try and eke out some value in this. Chelsea minus one would be where I'm going. They've covered that the last four times, so why wouldn't they do it again?
6-5 Chelsea, minus one on the handicap. And we finish with Cardiff versus Manchester City. This is a 4 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. Cardiff are 9-1 to win. They draw 9-2 with Manchester City 2-7. The enhancement that everyone wants here, Kevin De Bruyne to score and Man City to win, was 2-1. That's been enhanced to 5-2. If you do fancy City, I'm sure people will be looking at that enhancement. And Manchester City already through to one cup final after beating Bristol City over two legs midweek. Andy, how many trophies do you think they're going to win this season, City?
Well, yeah, they're probably going to be runners-up in the League Cup, so let's start with that. but, yeah, they might could well win the rest. And, you know, they are the dominant team in the league this year. But they have come off a bit of the boil recently. One stat I'd throw out here, which now you include the midweek game from the League Cup, they've not kept a clean sheet in 10. So I think, well, again, I'll look at Cardiff to score, but Man City to win. So City and both teams to score is where I'd look at. You've kind of seen it with some of the offers you've been mentioning earlier. We kind of know what's going to happen. Like, you've got Rashford to score and you've got Batshuayi to score as enhanced offers. Because that's telling you what we think the big teams are going to do. They're not going to put out the strongest teams, but City will put out a strong enough team to probably win here. But Cardiff will get a goal.
And De Bruyne is the bionic man, isn't he? He just starts every time. Even if he's not fit, he'll be in the starting lineup. So that's the enhancement there for City. Derek?
Well, yeah, it's a big one. This is the class of the managerial giants, this, according to Neil Warnock, anyway. Jesus. Pep against Warnock. I mean, has ever been such a clash of cultures and styles? He's got a split personality, Warnock. Split when he was younger, I think. I just can't have the man. I hope Man City absolutely stuffed him. And they might do, even if you play a shadow side, because you've got to argue that Cardiff might well play a shadow side too. I mean, they're still in the thick of the promotion race in the Championship, and we've seen, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that sides and, you know, managers in the Championship treat the FA Cup with contempt. You've got to go for City. I agree with Andy. They have gone off the boil. They're not quite their imperious best, but they're still getting the job done. They find a way to win, except against Liverpool, even when they're not firing on all cylinders, and they should win this. Cardiff have got a good record at home, only lost two all season. And they will make a fight of it, I think, probably. And I wouldn't argue with Andy either. I can see both sides scoring and City winning maybe 2-1.
Yeah, 7-4, that looks good. Manchester City to win the game and both teams to score in the match. Now, on to the Naps. And Derek, you are bidding for the hat-trick here, having landed back-to-back Naps. You go first, lead us off.
Well, you know what? There's a fixture on this list that really troubles me. Because when I looked at the ties, I thought Wigan are home to West Ham. We saw how West Ham struggled, you know, and Wigan took care of Bournemouth because Bournemouth weren't interested. David Moyes, the manager of West Ham, has made it clear he's not interested in the FA Cup this season. So I thought I'm going to be all over Wigan there. But they're favourites, 6-4. And I'm thinking, West Ham at 15-8. And even what I've said about them and David Moyes shows little interest, they still got through the third round and the 15-8 to beat a lower division side. I'm going to go against everything I've said here because I think that is too big. I think that's too big. 15-8 West Ham to win at Wigan.
Oh, I strongly fancy Wigan, Derek. They were going to be mine at Wigan to beat
were
West
they
Ham
really?
At 6-4.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because West Ham have got such an injury crisis at the moment, he'll struggle to field 11 even first team squad players. I think for that game.
I don't think he's on safe enough ground to be throwing away matches like
okay.
this, though, David Moyes. You know what I mean? I agree. When I look at the title, I'm going to be on Wigan all day long. But not at those odds. So you've got to be commanded by the odds in my eyes, and I'm commanded there for West Ham.
Okay, 15-8 for West Ham. For Derek, Andy?
Yeah, interestingly, I'll mention that game as well, because when I first looked at these games earlier in a week, Wigan were 21-10.
Yeah.
The prices absolutely collapsed off the back of West Ham not going to put a team out, apparently. So, yeah, I'm kind of going away from that one now because I don't really know where to go with it because Derek might be right. It might have swung too far to actually... I don't think Wigan are any value anymore, but they might well win it. So you kind of said I was confident about the one earlier. I am going for that 9-2 draw with Liverpool against West Brom.
Very good. Liverpool, West Brom to end all square. That is 9-2. I'm going to go with... I think Chelsea are going to thump Newcastle. I'm going Chelsea -2 in that game at Stamford Bridge against Newcastle. So West Ham 15-8, draw Liverpool versus West Brom at 9-2, and Chelsea -2 at 16-5 is my best bet this weekend. And that treble pays 65.41-1.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now it's a delight to welcome Miguel Delaney, the chief football writer at The Independent, onto the podcast. Joins myself and Derek to talk about, first of all, Watford's sacking of Marco Silva. Then we're going to speak about Liverpool Football Club as well. Miguel, good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon.
Are you enjoying a good week?
Yeah, not too bad. I was at Chelsea Arsenal the night before the pod, which was decent. Well, much better than the first leg anyway.
I don't think there's ever been a worse game of football than that first leg, though, Miguel. The bar was set pretty low there.
Yeah, completely. And actually, it was almost like as if, you know, both managers were kind of, you know, keeping the teams back to release them for last night. It was so different and so much more open a game.
Let's talk about Watford then. Given that Marco Silva has recently been sacked by the Pozzo family, his head was apparently turned by Everton's approach to Marco Silva. Were you surprised by the sacking, first of all, Miguel?
A little, maybe, given that performances, results were getting very bad and getting worse, but performances still weren't indicative of a manager that had completely lost the dressing room or anything like that. I mean, I did something with Michael Appleton, Leicester City assistant manager, the day after Leicester beat them, and he was even talking about how they didn't look like a team that were having those kind of problems. But obviously, there have already been rumblings that Watford would act, and you know, you only have to look at that run of results, bar that kind of very controversial match against Southampton that saved them a point. So from that perspective, it wasn't surprising. Maybe the fact that they've gone this drastic, but it's also such an interesting turnaround, or maybe a startling turnaround, because for a manager that had been talked about so highly, was, you know, getting courted, obviously, by one of England's most historic and historically successful clubs in Everton, and had people from both Manchester United and Chelsea looking at him to the long term, he's gone from that to now in the space of, what, 7 months, a relegation and a sacking. So in a wider scale, it's surprising from that perspective.
Watford aren't a club, though, Miguel, that are afraid to do things differently. Since the Pozzo family took over in 2012, you feel like there's always a bullet in the chamber, don't you? And these managers don't last a long time, but they've had success when they've had these quick turnarounds.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, I think there's maybe a wider argument here in whether what's happened with Silva, because he's probably the one manager I've had in this time that has actually really kind of, I mean, okay, Kike Sanchez-Flores had a little bit in the first half of the season before it all petered out. But Silva is kind of the first manager I've had in this time that has looked like he's had interest from bigger, wealthier clubs. So, I mean, it did seem so premature for him to suddenly look to Everton after 9 games. But when you set yourself up as a club that where everything is kind of not fleeting, but the whole nature of the core of the squad and everything is run is that you can kind of weather the loss of anyone, and you know people are only there for a year, 2 years, then that situation with Silva almost feels like a natural consequence of all that. Almost became self-fulfilling in that regard.
And Derek, they're 10th in the table, Watford, which seems remarkable to dismiss Silva. But that, since that Everton story came out about Silva wanting to leave, Everton wanting him as manager, their form has fallen off a cliff. And I know you've advocated in the past that clubs, when they get in a situation like this, they should act quickly.
Yeah, well, we used to laugh at teams in Italy and Spain doing that, didn't they? They'd have a manager for 3 months and then they'd sack him and get another one, and the same thing happened. And we'd all laugh over here with our holier-than-thou attitude. It can never happen here. And now it does on a weekly basis. And I can understand why. You know, you can't afford to be saddled with a lame duck manager for too long when the players aren't playing for him and the results are getting worse. But I don't think Marco Silva was a lame duck manager, far from it. You don't turn into a bad manager overnight. Even though Watford's results suggested he did. They're 10th in the league. What do they want? What do Watford expect? Okay, the results weren't coming, but the performances weren't that bad. They've had a lot of bad luck, Watford. And I think it's priceless for the Watford board and owners, if this is true, what we hear, to act with a cob on just because Marco Silva was fluttering his eyelashes at Everton when they sack it. They sack managers, you know, by the month. They have a manager of the month each month. So I think that's priceless, but how many? He's gone in about 8 weeks from keep your hands off our manager, get this useless dipstick out of here. How has that happened? He was looked upon as the second coming. Now he's the second going after getting sacked at Hull and Watford. It's, I think his biggest sin was to keep on picking Tom Cleverley, because no manager has lasted long after doing that at whatever club he's been at. I like Marco Silva, and I actually think there's more to this than meets the eye. I think there's something actually gone on here, that he's being courted again, not by Everton, because Hippo Head is saddled there, but maybe by another club. And I think maybe, although the players, I think, were still playing for him, I actually think his attention has been turned. I think we'll hear more from Marco Silva, and a decent-sized club will be picking him up very, very shortly, because otherwise, even with Watford's record of sacking, it still doesn't make sense to me.
Miguel, can you give us any insight about the man that's in there now, Javi Gracia, who has managed at Malaga relatively recently, Ruben Kazan as well. What's he going to bring to the party?
Well, he very much fits a profile for Watford, in the sense of, I suppose, the continental style. I know they're massive fans of the Spanish profile. I mean, one thing, I remember hearing this from a Premier League executive, basically, that one of the reasons why they still go for young Spanish and German players over young English players, because the quality of the coaching and because the way the coaches have trained up. And Javi Gracia is a classic example, basically, of this recently trained up Spanish coach. He was over at Malaga, took over them at what was a difficult time in the club's history, given they'd had this massive infusion of money and then it all basically turned to dust. But he came in there in the wake of this and was someone who was renowned for basically being a big problem for the big sides. I think one of the quotes about him was that he was chloroform for the big clubs, for the way he would kind of smother them. So yeah, tactically adept in that sense. It would be easy, I suppose, to kind of write him off as another identical foreign coach in that sense, that Watford maybe are specialising, but there's clearly a reason for that, and he's got something about him.
Let's move on now. Let's talk about Liverpool. We've talked about Liverpool on this podcast, Derek, on numerous occasions, because they're such an intriguing side, Liverpool, because they've had such success against the top six clubs in the league, and they've underperformed seemingly against those in the bottom half of the table. And the result last week, Andy talked about this earlier on in the podcast, saved William Hill's skin, that loss against Swansea. Are Liverpool just running into clubs at the wrong time. You look at Swansea having a renaissance under Carlos Carvalhal. They've got Everton. They played them very soon after the appointment of Sam Allardyce. The same situation with West Brom and Alan Pardew. And they got Watford the first day of the season as well. And anyone that's played Watford in the last 6 weeks has had almost a free pass. Or is there a deeper underlying problem with Liverpool, Derek?
Well, are they meeting teams at the wrong time? Yes, with Jurgen Klopp as manager. You know I've been his biggest critic, and when they're on their glowing days, Liverpool, they're fantastic. But are they doing anything differently to what Liverpool did under Roy Evans, when they were absolutely marvellous to watch, but won nothing and kept slipping up against teams like this? Roy Evans was hounded out of Liverpool for that. Jurgen Klopp is anointed as the new Messiah. I don't understand it. You play a team like Swansea, like Liverpool did on Monday, you know how they're going to set up. You know it. And yes, he still plays the same tactics. You know, every match, doesn't matter what the opposition, he plays the same tactics. And if you set up as a midfield three of Emre Can, the Ox, and Jorginho Wijnaldum, and you expect to break down an 11-man defence, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. And you know what? If he picks the same midfield against West Brom at the weekend, I'll be lumping on West Brom, because I know exactly what's going to happen. I've seen it time and time again. And I'm sorry, I seem to be bashing the drum alone here, but I can't have Jurgen Klopp as this fantastic manager everybody rates him to be. I just can't have it.
Very interesting. Miguel, people even before that game against Swansea were saying it would be just like Liverpool to perform as they did against Manchester City, get that great 4-3 win, and then go to Wales and get beaten by Swansea, and that's what happened. Why is it that this is just like Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, in the same way, or in the flip side of Liverpool in the 1780s being, you know, the identity of the club essentially, of these consistent, ruthless winning machines. In the 90s and new millennium, it's basically been a team that can produce these brilliant big wins only to immediately undercut themselves. And the classic example, if you go back to, as Derek mentioned there, Roy Evans, 95-96, beat Newcastle 4-3, the next game lost to Coventry. The following season, 96-97, I think it was they beat Arsenal in that Robbie Fowler penalty game, and the next game again lost to Coventry. I'd need to check it, but I think that's the case. But anyway, two defeats to Coventry followed two big wins. And I suppose if you come back to the idea of the sort of teams that win titles, it comes down to that consistency that Liverpool used to show, that ability to just kind of grind out these wins. Now, in the modern game, and given how disproportionately influenced it is by money, it means, I suppose, having big squads, plenty of strength and depth, which City and Chelsea have had, everyone bar Leicester has had basically, but that, I suppose, was an element of a freak season about it in so many ways. And so Liverpool don't have that, maybe, in contrast to United, in contrast to City, in contrast to Chelsea. But I suppose what Klopp was built up as, especially what he was at Dortmund, was someone that could defy these issues, that could find a way. And he's done some of the job in the way he has this brilliant record against the big teams. And it's a better record against the big teams than Liverpool have had in any of that time, really. But he still hasn't found this solution. This is going on three seasons now. Now, they're more consistent than they were. They're gradually getting more consistent. But it's still a problem. And even, I think what was so dispiriting for Liverpool even about Monday, it wasn't just that they were beaten. It was how flat the team looked and how he couldn't really force a change. And it said more, I mean, after the City game, some of the talk was about who needs Coutinho, whereas with this now, suddenly the absence of Coutinho became kind of painfully relevant.
One other thing, you know, you look at Klopp and you see how Liverpool are playing, and you think, and you after 20 minutes, they were in trouble on Monday night, a seasoned Liverpool watcher. And you knew it wasn't going to change for the next 70 minutes because Klopp is unable to change things. And you remember when he got to the Europa League final against Seville, and that game, Liverpool were walking that game. It was the easiest final I'd ever seen. It was impossible for Liverpool not to win that game. Second half, Seville came out a totally different team, and the manager had changed things. And they marmalised Liverpool. Klopp is not capable of doing that. He's not capable. What you get from Liverpool in the 20 minutes, first 20 minutes, is what you'll get in the last 20 minutes. And it's sickening.
Yeah. In fact, it'd be interesting to look back at his, particularly his Liverpool career, I suppose. Even to my mind now, there aren't too many examples that jump out. Okay, they've had comebacks. They haven't had too many comebacks I can think of where Klopp has made a big tactical change that has completely altered the flow of a game. And of course, there was that stat that came out after the game as well. In the matches where Liverpool have had most possession, they've struggled. They've had some of their worst results. And if teams figure this out, I suppose, or enact this to an even greater degree than it has been done, basically just leave them with the ball, they could have more problems.
Hi, I'm Pete Farries, and I've got to say I'm very, very relieved. Sheffield United coming through against Norwich last weekend got me a very, very much needed 2-1 shout, and it gave me a big boost of confidence going into this weekend's depleted Championship calendar. I could have looked at plenty of the FA Cup games, and believe me, there's plenty of value there, but I've actually stayed in the Championship this week in this diminished fixture list, and I've taken QPR draw no bet away at Bristol City. If you were listening last week, you'll know my rationale for backing against Norwich was a tough game that went to extra time and, of course, beyond against Chelsea. And while, of course, Bristol City didn't have that this week, they were dispatched by Manchester City in 90 minutes, the truth of the matter is their form has been very poor indeed. Yes, they did brilliantly, only lost 3-2, of course, but ultimately, this is a Bristol City side with no win in any competition since Boxing Day. Their form is poor whether they played midweek against the league's best side in Manchester City or otherwise. I think QPR are a superb bit of value here. Now, of course, they're not a great side, but they have won a couple of their last five games at home against Cardiff and away at Burton. And yes, their away form has not been good at all. Only two wins, and those two wins came at Birmingham and at Burton. But I think Bristol City will be tired again, both physically and mentally. Their form is poor generally, and of course, QPR are beginning to at least improve a little bit. I think there's a lot of value on QPR, so my nap of the week in the Championship is QPR draw no bet at 2-1. Let's hear what Gav Pochalowski has to say this week about some of the League One sides.
Football cliche time. I've got to pick myself up and just get on with the next game after the disappointment of Shrewsbury last weekend, letting my nap down. They were 2-0 up at home to Doncaster with 20 to play, and drew 2-2. Doncaster's equalising goal, ball into the box, Shrewsbury keeper came and claimed and then carried it over the goal line, and Doncaster found a late equaliser, and it's Doncaster who are my nap selection this weekend at 6-5 to win at home to Bristol Rovers. Doncaster got that draw away at Shrewsbury, then midweek 95th minute equaliser to draw 1-1 away at Scunthorpe. Cue mini pitch invasion. They were delighted, and Doncaster back at home, well, that's where they're at their strongest. That's where they're winning games and they're scoring plenty. Two against MK Dons, three against Northampton, two against Rochdale. Marquis, Coppinger, Ben Whiteman from midfield, all potent in front of goal. And Bristol Rovers, well, they've drawn their last three games away from home at Walsall, Oldham and Blackpool, so the draw could be a play in this one. But Bristol Rovers, before those three draws, had lost 10 games in 12 on their travels. And I think this is going to be a tough game for Bristol Rovers. They're due a defeat on the road, and I think it will come at the hands of Doncaster Rovers. It could be overs on the goals, but my nap is Doncaster Rovers to beat Bristol Rovers at 6-5. Looking ahead at League Two, here's Al Ross.
It's been a long time since Luton were any value to back in League Two. 6 points clear after the weekend, almost always shorter than 1-2 recently, but poor recent form and the loss of top scorer Danny Hilton to a hamstring injury has pushed their price out to the point where, for the first time in a long time, there is value in backing the best team in this league. A poor 2018, yes, but they've been victims of their own success. Long cup runs mean they've been playing Saturday, Tuesday every week since December 23rd. Perhaps not surprising, they lost a few while on that run of 7 games in 3 weeks, including an FA Cup defeat at Newcastle. They had last midweek off though, and at the weekend they won, and they won without Danny Hilton. Top scorer, yes, but he only accounts for a quarter of the team's goals. Christian Deutsch at Forest Green, by contrast, has 60% of their team's goals. Losing Hilton, not as worrying as you think. And Luton have had another midweek off. That should be their recovery complete. And I like their opponents, Grimsby, and I like Russell Slade, but I know a team on the slide when I see one. Since they lost to Luton 2-0 on December 23rd, they've only got 2 draws, last week and on Boxing Day. They've lost to Accrington, to Crewe, to Morecambe, to Newport. Slade has publicly said he wants new players and publicly said he is struggling to bring them in. It's sounding a little ragged. It's at Grimsby, yes, but there are only four teams in the league who fare worse at home than away from home, and Grimsby are the lowest ranked of all those four. So the nap this week is the runaway league leaders Luton at 17-20.
That's all for this week's edition of the Punt Podcast, folks. I hope you've enjoyed it. Special thanks go to Miguel Delaney, the chief football writer at The Independent, for his contribution. And thank you to Derek McGovern, Andy Excel, Gav Pushlowski, Pete Farries, Al Ross and Sam Norris, who all contributed as well. And make sure you're back on Monday. Big podcast on Monday here on The Punt with the full set of fixtures midweek. We'll hear from Derek McGovern on those once again. He's going to be joined by Alex Dunn to preview the fixtures for Tuesday and Wednesday. Remember, if you want to access this podcast weekly, you can get it at audioboom.com, and it lives in all the usual podcast places as well. And check out the betting, all the offers with William Hill by going to sports.williamhill.com or find us on the app. Lots of football coming your way then over the course of the next few days in the FA Cup. Good luck with all that, and make sure you're back with us on Monday for the next edition of the Punt Podcast here at William Hill.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.